Hey, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Let There Be Talk. Today is Monday, August 24th, and this episode is brought to you by Earthquaker Devices. Yes! If you play guitar, bass, keyboards, whatever, you're a singer, anything, you're going to need some stomp boxes, some foot pedals, and Earthquaker Devices makes the best in the biz from Akron, Ohio, the land of Devo. Go to Earthquaker Devices and pick your poison. They got all kinds of amazing pedals. Not only that, but they look fucking cool too. That way when people are in the front row looking down at your pedals, you'll even look cool with your pedals, which is hard to do. Some pedals just look dumb and ugly. These are awesome looking, awesome sounded, handmade. Get yourself something cool like a tentacle. Or maybe a Earthquaker the Warden. Or a Sound Shank. A Sound Shank. That sounds pornographic. Hey, baby, here's my Sound Shank. Rock and roll foot stomp pedals. I love them. Earthquaker Devices. They are the King Kong sponsor for almost 2 years now. Get yourself a pedal, visit them at earthquakerdevices.com, email them, tell them you heard it right here on Let There Be Talk, and they're very nice people. They will hook you up with a sweet deal. All the pedals are pretty damn reasonable. See, that's a pedal. Man, that's a delay pedal. Reasonable. Anyway, earthquakerdevices.com. All right, let's get into the episode. First of all, I want to say thank you to all the emails and tweets I got over the last week over the Devo episode. Unbelievable. I can't believe how many people loved that episode. It was one of my top five of all time to do, of course, and part two is coming in the next few weeks. It was just great to see all the people that were like, wow, I only knew Devo for maybe Whip It or something. Thanks for turning me on to it. Which I love. That's what I love about this podcast, I think, the most is, you know, of course you might have tuned in because I love rock or heavy metal, but there's way more out there than that, man. And, you know, as much as I love rock or heavy metal, I love different styles of music just as much, especially singer-songwriter and alt country, which I can't even tell you how much I love that. At the end of the day, it really comes down to a fucking kick-ass song, a song that'll stick with you for a lifetime, that you hear anywhere, somewhere, walking, talking, rocking, whatever you're doing, Starbucks, wherever you're at, an airplane, fucking shopping in some store, and a song comes on and it stops you in your tracks. That's a fucking song, one that takes you back to the day you heard it or whatever, the neighborhood you grew up in, old friends, old girlfriend breakups. Songs, man. I can't tell you how much I love songs. And to get a good song, to write a good song is fucking, I can't even tell you how hard that is. 1%. Half of 1%, probably. I don't know. Not 1%. I don't even know the count of who could write a good song. You know? But I'll tell you what. I put on Neil Young's On the Beach or Tonight's the Night, I'll lose my fucking mind. You know? Bruce Springsteen, the Eagles. I remember one of the first records I ever bought was Don McLean's Bye Bye Miss American Pie. It was a 45. It had a red, white, and blue thumb on it, like a hitchhiking thumb. I love that song. Carole King, I said it over and over. Tapestry record, absolutely, I think, resets my brain when I'm getting completely frazzled in the world, whatever I'm doing. I come home, put that on. And it gets me back into the slot. on the slot track. Remember those? AFX, was that them? Slot tracks? Those little cars. I love those, man, when I was young. You just fucking put the car on the track and race. How simple is that? Way pre-video game. Old man talking right now. Old man, take a look at me now. James Taylor. All that stuff. Just amazing, amazing songs. It's funny how you could just hear a song and completely put you right back into a great mood. My guest today, he is an amazing songwriter. And I'm fucking man enough to admit it now. When I was younger and this guy blew into San Fran, I admit it, I was jealous. Heard a lot of stuff. Jackie Green, Jackie Green, Jackie Green. And after a while, you're like, fuck. But that was just me being an idiot, being jealous, just blocking it like, nah, I ain't down. That shit you do. That's stuff you do in life. It's so fucking weird. I don't know why you do it. I don't know why I did it. It probably goes back to some fucking only child shit. As much as I like being an only child, you know, you got some fucking broken antidotes in your mind. But last week, or maybe 2 weeks ago, I went and saw Jackie Green at the Troubadour. I've seen Jackie Green a few times. I saw him last year. Me and Biddlecombe went and saw him at the Canyon Club. I saw him play with the Black Crowes, you know. But I got to say, 2 weeks ago, and I think not only being some jealous idiot younger, but also my brain was probably ready for Jackie Green. Like it was for the Dead a few months back, or whenever you finally let a band in, you know? Like, oh shit, I hated Bruce Springsteen growing up. I'll tell you what, I've talked about it many a times. And then boom, I see him at the Shoreline at the Bridge Benefit, and he does the Ghost of Tom Joad record, and my whole fucking life changes. Thank God I didn't like all music at the very beginning. Imagine if you just loved everything growing up. You would have nothing now. I wouldn't have Pink Floyd. You know, young growing up, fuck Pink Floyd. Stoner rock. Fucking stoners. Now, Pink Floyd every other day here at the house. And punk rock. You know, like I said, I watched that, the Sonic Highways and Girls doing the punk rock episode in DC, and fuck, boom, I'm on a punk rock roll. You know what I'm saying is, well, basically what I'm saying is fucking Jackie Green was on fire at the Troubadour, and I went by myself. I sat front row balcony and I took it in, and I was like, this guy can fucking sing, he can write a song, he can play guitar, he can play keyboards. I mean, this guy's the real deal. His new record, Back to Birth, came out on Friday, and it is incredible. The song on the intro here was Now I Can See for Miles. It's the second song in the record. I love this record. I've been playing it all weekend. The King is Dead is fantastic. Trust Somebody, awesome ballad. I'm a sucker for ballads. Jackie Green, I love you, man. And I'm looking forward to seeing you for the rest of my life, man. You know? Because I know you're going to keep putting records out, and I'm going to keep going. And thank you for doing the episode, dude. You're a great man. Also, all the stuff you did with Trigger Hippie. Check that out last year. Pretty much, there it is. You know? If you don't like something, give it another chance or try it at another time in your life. Remember when you first drank Jack Daniels? You're like, and a year later, you were addicted to it. Well, there you go. That's going to be anything in your life. Go out and try shit. You're here once. Before I get to Jackie shows this week, I'll be at the Hollywood Improv doing the world famous Juice show at 10 p.m. I'm fired up. It's the second time I've ever done this show. It's always stacked with killers. So come out to that. Also, Thursday night, I will be at the Hollywood Improv at 8 p.m. And Jim Florentine and I got another distortion show September 9th at the Comedy Store Belly Room, 8 p.m. Get your tickets, please, soon for that, because it will sell out. September 9th, Belly Room, Jim Florentine and I, and a secret guest. And Sacramento, coming your way September 10th through the 13th with Ian Edwards. That's going to be fucking great. I love all you guys, and I can't thank you enough for leaving the reviews. Keep leaving the reviews and donations. Wow, I've gotten some great donations over the last few weeks. Thank you. Email me at deandelray@yahoo.com. Talk to me. Say hi on Twitter, Instagram. Light the candles. Here he is, Jackie Green. All right, here we are. Another episode of Left to Be Talk. We've got a great guest today, Mr. Jackie Green.
What is up? What is up?
Fuck, been trying to get you for like a year now.
No, come on, at least three.
Yeah, three. That's true. That is true, right?
I think so, man.
Yeah. Last time I saw you was out at Canyon Club.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
we were going to do it there, and then it was just too late and shit.
It was like, it was just weird. Sort of like it was a weird place anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, there's too many people. There's a party going on.
Yeah, and now we're at the Troub, which is a totally normal place.
Yeah, this is a perfect place to interview, actually. Did you ever see the Eagles documentary?
No.
God, you haven't seen that?
Wait, what? Isn't there like five of them?
Well, it's 3 hours.
Okay.
And there's one, two, and three. But the history of this place is fucking mind-boggling.
Sure, yeah.
You know, I mean, you're talking about back then... you have basically this like kind of like a jamboree night, mm-hmm. like let's say it's Monday, I don't know, and right. guys would come down and it'd be like Jackson Browne,
right? Yeah.
It'd be Linda Ronstadt, Van Morrison, and they would all get up and jam.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and the Eagles kind of became, you know, like this. That's where they kind of formed right in here.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, pretty insane.
I know,
man.
That they had that famous one of the famous. Recordings of Donny Hathaway live is from the Troubadour.
Oh yeah. 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 I met Pete Townsend right in this dressing room we're at, and that was unbelievable.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's an iconic room.
I wonder how much body fluid is on the
Yeah, it's got to be a lot. And cocaine.
The couch you're sitting on actually right now, dude.
Well, yeah, it's just semen couch and coke.
I know. Do you like it?
This is a funny thing. I was in San Francisco. I grew up Bay Area and playing music all my life. And it seemed kind of like out of nowhere in the 90s, you arrive.
Well, it probably would have been late 90s, early 2000s. I remember, I'll tell you, we can jump forward a little bit. The first time we met, you might not remember, the first time you and I met, you were emceeing for... The Mother Hips
Halloween
Christmas shows at the Great American Music Hall.
Yeah, like, you were playing keyboards.
Yeah, it was like 2004 maybe or two.
Right.
It was a while ago. And I thought to myself, the first time I met you, I thought that you were a crazy person.
Yeah, well,
I thought you were insane. I thought, Tim just hired a crazy person to MC his show. Okay, that's what we're dealing with here.
That's hilarious because I was pretty mellow by that time.
You were mellow.
Yeah.
That was mellow.
I don't know. This seems like San Fran, these things hit. Like, I remember when Brendan Benson hit, you know, I don't know where all of a sudden it's like this guy and the whole town is on it and it's up and running, you know, bottom of the hill. And it felt like that a little bit with you. It was just like all of a sudden you were there, you know?
I guess so. I don't know. If that's true, then God bless it. Cause I don't really know, man. I just showed up and started playing in San Francisco because there were more places. Because I'm from Sacramento, and there was more places to play in San Francisco. And you know, Sacramento is just, you know, it's like an hour and a half away. So, actually, you know what it was? You know, San Francisco KFOG was the first radio station to play me. Sacramento wouldn't even play me. So
what, a demo or your?
No, just my first record. They would play it like on their morning show, you know, and we started getting gigs around San Francisco because of that, and it's like we, you know, could barely get a gig in our own hometown. So
now how do you even get this going? Because it's like all of a sudden you're in town, you got a record, and I mean, I played Sacramento a lot, you know, Press Club and all that, and I knew Nate, who's in your band now, and Sweet Vine and everything, but I never heard of Jackie Green until you were around the Mother Hips. How do you get a record deal out of Sacramento? Are you like demoing?
Yeah, basically, I made demos, and then the record company that put out my first record was like a small record label in Sacramento.
Oh wow!
And so from there, like, I got a booking agent from there, and then they stuck me on some tours with like B.B. King and because I was playing a lot of blues stuff, you know, back then, and Buddy Guy and all that. And then the next thing I know, I'm getting gigs in San Francisco and getting gigs, you know, elsewhere. And
right.
It's like, it's sort of just sort of snowballed from that one thing. And I can see how it would sort of look like all of a sudden, you know, if you're living in San Francisco, all of a sudden I show up there, and it is kind of true in a way. But it's only because of the infrastructure that was already there in San Francisco, like the radio was playing it, and,
yeah,
you know, and you know, knowing Tim and all those, you know, San Francisco staples, you know, knowing all those cats, you know,
right,
kind of a big help. So
yeah, K-Fog was definitely a major way I found out about newer bands, like, you know, Jayhawks.
They're
playing Whiskey Town, 16
right.
Days.
Exactly.
All that stuff. They were in Wilco. They played the shit out of them. They had K-Fog Wilco concerts. And as lame as radio was, I would find nuggets out of there.
I know. K-Fog was pretty cool.
Yeah, like they played that, like, know? Chuck Prophet.
Exactly, Chuck.
They played the Hips, all
exactly,
that stuff.
Yeah.
So the early stuff, when I first see it, it's pretty heavy Dylan.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how old were you when you did that
record?
Dude,
those first records, I was 21.
21
or 22, those first records.
How do you get into Dylan in that era? Because we're talking like right post-grunge probably.
Yeah. Well, it's actually kind of, it makes a lot of sense if you look at it, because like I'm coming from a perspective of being, and you know, of being in high school, being 15, 16 years old, and you know, the big thing on pop radio at the time is our boy bands,
right?
So, you know, it's pretty easy to sort of like,
NSYNC, that kind of stuff.
Yes, that kind of stuff.
Right.
So you're like, well, you know, that's what half the kids are listening to. I want something else, right?
Right.
So you're thinking, you know, for me, what I found is I found old blues music. I turned into like a blues nerd. You know, I like Buddy Guy, Muddy Waters, and B.B. King.
Was that like your dad or your mom or just
you?
Yeah,
it was just me finding like old records and old, you know, stuff in basements. And I actually found a Ray Charles record, and I put that on. That was like one of the first things I got turned onto at a sort of a young age. And so from there, I sort of, when I was in high school, I sort of discovered this, you know, around, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s music, you know, and sort of inevitably you find Dylan and you find the Allman Brothers, you find, you know, stuff like that. And then, so, you know, by the time I was out of high school, I had this sort of, you know, I had this sort of backlog of this old sort of hip music, you know, in my brain, and that's just sort of what influenced me. And that's, and also, you know, at the same time, around that time is when that Oh Brother Where Art Thou soundtrack came out.
T-Bone.
Yeah, and so that sort of like, you know, people sort of started paying attention to sort of roots music, you know, again.
Yeah.
And I was like,
well, alt country was really a hot.
It started happening again. Right?
Fucking loved it, you know.
You know, so it sort of was a good time for that small niche, you know.
And the New York Times, was it them that they gave this classic the next Dylan?
Yeah, they said, they called me the Prince of Americana or something that.
And I mean, that's got to blow your fucking head off. You're like a 21-year-old kid from SAC.
At the time, it was weird. They were at Bonner. It was like our first like big festival gig. It was Bonnaroo. And we played Bonnaroo. I don't know. This was probably 2005 at that point. 2004, maybe. Yeah, and then we read that, you know, some writer wrote that the next day, and we're like, you know, the label ran with it.
Yeah,
that got stuck on everything.
Yeah, right. You know? Now, does that fuck with your head? How do you keep that together? Because I know if I'm 21 and they're calling me, like, you know, the next Tweety, you know, which at the time I was like, whoa, Tweety's a guy, I would fucking lose my mind, you know? I mean, ego-wise, you know what I mean? Walking around like, fuck, I'm badass.
I don't know, man. I just never really... I mean to be fair, like I've never really, I still to this day don't really pay that much attention to the kind of things that you know. I mean, I like, if, like anybody else, I feel good when people you know write nice things about you. But at the same time, it's like, you know, I mean, your job is to really just go out there and, you know, and make music and play shows, and like, I don't know, I've just never really gotten that sidetracked from that.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know, I just don't. I don't know. I probably read the New York Times now more as a 30-something-year-old than I ever... I mean, I never read the fucking New York Times when I was 25.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? Love the New York Times.
I do now, I do.
Yeah, right?
You know what I mean?
I really think it's like fucking the last thing in America besides 60 Minutes
yeah, right.
that have I you, really you, grab onto.
Have you ever seen that New York Times documentary that just came out, like behind the pages or something?
It's no, I got to see that.
It's pretty good. It no matter what you think about the Times, like you could, you know, you can call bullshit on them all you want, but there's some legit stuff, you know, that
yeah.
If you see that, you'll have a newfound respect, you know, and it's just like it's an institution for sure.
Well, I always do a bit where I say, if you want anybody to believe anything or bullshit you're saying,
yeah, right.
you just say like, yeah, man, it turns out cats can cause cancer. And they go, what? And you go, yeah, I read it in the New York Times.
Exactly, yeah, right.
And then that's just fucking clout.
Yeah. Yeah.
They go, oh shit, get rid of the cats.
Yeah. They validate everything.
Yeah.
Like, New York Times. Just whatever you say, just put a New York Times tagline.
That's all you got to do. And then people just fucking, well, all right. You know,
yeah, right.
It's exactly. Hilarious.
Exactly.
So you get the first record out. It's on a small label in Sacramento. And then do the big labels start coming immediately?
Well, then I made a second record. And then it got wind, Universal Music got wind of it. And then I signed to Verve Forecast, one of their labels. They bought the record, and then that was my first big record deal. And then they paid for the next two records, and then I got dropped from that label. Well, I probably pissed a lot of people off because I was very idealistic at the time. I didn't want to do this, and I didn't want to do that. And I,
are you a rigid guy? Like
I used to be a little more rigid. I'm not nearly. I'm not like that at all anymore. I'm like getting too old for that. But you got to remember, I was 26 or
right.
25 or 26 years old. Like I, you know. I thought my way was the only way. You know?
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Well, so. I mean, you know, it's I always tell people when they say like, oh, this guy sold out or that guy sold out or whatever, I'm like Cobain,
right.
You know, who these guys? If you're making music, you have to get into the machine.
Yeah, exactly.
Or else you wouldn't play on stage. You'd play in your bedroom.
Right. Exactly.
So everybody wants to get somewhere.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of give and take that you have, and I just wasn't given an inch back, you know, back then, but. So yeah, I mean, you know, it was all good because, you know, that the next record that I had, American Myth record, it had a song on there that went on that did pretty well at radio across the country, and that opened up, you know, markets for us in like Pittsburgh and places where we've never been,
right.
You know, in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and just sort of weird spots where now we can still go back and play some of those clubs, you know, and
well. Now you get signed. You do a record at 21. You're called the Prince of Americana, and then by what 26 you're dropped. Are you fucking like whoa? What happened? I mean, because
yeah,
usually
I mean,
when
that,
you get dropped, you're done.
Yeah. Well. Except for at the same time, the whole business is changing to begin with.
So totally.
It's like, you know, it's being, you know, being dropped from a label didn't mean you were done. It just mean you had to find another home.
Yeah,
and it
at meant
this
that
you had
time
to go to an
now.
Yeah, and it means,
and I think with Americana music too.
Yeah, for
it's
sure.
Different
it
than,
means it means you had to find a new home for your next record. You know, and like, and I wasn't gonna stop making records, so that's what I did. I just went to an indie label, and which is, you know, where I'm at now. And I think that's the case for a lot of people. You know,
yeah.
It's like if you're not at a big label selling a ton of records, then they don't really have any time for you, you know, especially nowadays. I mean, it's even harder now.
Yeah, I mean, like, how could you have, like, Jackie Greene on a big label and think that it's going to, like, right. Whoa, we're gonna sell millions of records.
Exactly. I mean, especially now. I mean, it's not, you know, I'm not on tour with Katy Perry, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So.
Now, you record, you have like massive knowledge. You had a recording studio in San Francisco with Tim, mm-hmm. right? And you have massive knowledge of recording and you play a lot of different instruments and stuff.
Yeah.
How do you learn all this? You learn it early on, or are you just like, fuck it, I need to learn how to record my own shit?
I think it's a process. I think like from a very early age, I mean, I think it's a natural progression to sort of be interested in recording music once you start writing it, because you want to hear yourself, you know, you're like, well, what do I sound like? So, you know, I start off with like two little tape decks and bouncing shit back and forth, you know, and then it turned into, well, you know, I have a multi-track machine, and then it turned into, you know, effects, and then all of a sudden you start learning about microphones and preamps, and the next thing you know, you're with your buddy Tim making a studio. You know?
Yeah, yeah, just throwing money away.
Just throwing
right?
money away. That's the next thing that happens.
Now, you start playing with the Mother Hips. Do you think this is really kind of where you get your your kind of jam roots from, or did you have it before? Because, you know, the Mother Hips is really, I am now like certified full blown Grateful Dead head. You know, I call myself a metal deadhead.
A metalhead.
A dead metalhead.
A dead metalhead, yeah.
But I found it backwards, meaning early on, Mother Hips really opened my fucking mind to like that whole Horde era and all that of like, whoa, you could take music way somewhere else, because I wasn't on board with the Dead, because I always thought like, trust fund, you know, fans, and I need a miracle. And now it's so funny, I wish I was there earlier, but I found a lot of music from the Mother Hips.
Yeah, so did I. I mean, I remember seeing the Mother Hips when I was in, you know, when I was in high school, and I think Shootout was out at the time, and it was sort of, you know, that was on a big label, and that was, you know, that was, there was, they had songs on there that were getting some airplay, and I thought they were like going to be the next, the biggest thing I'd ever seen, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, there was definitely a certain sort of jammy element to them, but for me, it was really all about the songs that they had, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, they sort of touched me in the same way that, like I could listen to Neil Young, or I could listen to, you know, or at the time, Bob Dylan or anything like that. And I'm like, this is just good to me, you know?
Well, I think Shootout, they were a totally different band than they are on, the first American record or their own record. Right. I mean, when I first start seeing them, they're straight up like a jam band.
Totally, like the Chico days.
Yep, but great songs. Yeah, they weren't like songs, some of the jam bands, you're just like, where's the fucking songs?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I didn't even know they jammed until I saw them, you know? I was like, oh, whoa, fucking Ben Lost is 24 minutes.
Yeah,
sick.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And I really start to see Chris Robinson coming around, and he wants to produce him. And I can see the influence of the Hips on Black Crowes for sure, man. That probably Chris wouldn't cop to, but I mean, he's at their shows and all of a sudden they're jamming the next record, you know, Amorica.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think the Hips are probably one of the most underrated bands in our time. I think that, for your listeners who don't know them, I mean, we both love them, so
definitely
fucking check them out. And the sad thing is those, I don't think you can get those. Well, you might be able to get them online now. Can you get? I mean, I still have a copy of Shootout, so. I know that record hasn't been available for a long time, but that's easily one of my favorites. And their new stuff is great, you know, like...
Oh, yeah, Pacific Dust was a masterpiece.
It's unbelievable.
What's really crazy, too, is usually with bands, they put new records out 20 years in. Mm-hmm. You barely give it a spin.
Right.
Barely. For some reason, it's weird, right?
But Tim's become... I mean, he's become even a better singer than he was, which I don't know how it's even possible, because he was always a great singer, and he hates his voice on those old records. He's like, man, I hate that shit. I'm like, dude, you sound great.
Yeah, well, everybody hates their old shit.
Yeah.
Isn't that hilarious?
It's hilarious, but I'm like, dude, you sound great, and those songs are great. And he's like, oh man, I think they suck. I'm like, dude, you're crazy.
Yeah,
but you know, the new stuff is amazing. You know, and he just continues to write great songs, and he's a great singer, and he's just, you know him. He's an all around good dude.
Yep. And a survivor. Those guys are fucking junkies, you know?
Fucking survivor, yeah.
Like, and they make it out.
They live to tell the tale, you know?
Yeah, it's wild. Speaking of that, were you getting any partying going? Did you get lost a little bit while you were...
I got a little lost, but I never really... I don't think I got as far deep as a lot of our friends did, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, to this day, I'll smoke a little dope, you know, but I'm still on the straight and narrow, you know.
Yeah, that's different, you know. But Sacramento, it's got a lot of drugs, man.
It's
hard to dodge.
Man, maybe in your time, man, when I was playing clubs, there was just like, I mean, there was people doing a lot of blow and stuff, but that shit never really like did it for me.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm just like, I'm wired and high strung. I can't even have two cups of coffee. So like, you wouldn't want me. You wouldn't want me on two.
I think it'd be the opposite for you, like me.
Am I falling asleep?
Yeah, right. You just turn into this introvert. You know,
great.
You're like, hey, wait, you just did big pounds of blow, and you're not saying a word. You're
right,
like,
and you're sleeping.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not going to test it anytime soon.
You were playing keys with the Mother Hips and. And you play fucking keys great, you know, B3. That shit is hard to play. B3, Fender Rhodes and all that.
Yeah.
What Were you getting off on that? Like, fuck, man, I'm playing with the hips.
I mean, like, you know, like I've said it for a long time. They're literally one of my favorite rock bands of all time. So it's fucking awesome to just, you know, to play anything with those guys. And just, you know, at this point now, we're all such friends. It's just like, it's no big deal. But I remember, you know, first sort of, I think it was those first shows that you and I met at. I was like, those were some of the first shows that I played with them. I was real nervous. I was like, you know, are they going to like anything I do? And Tim's always so supportive. He's like, that was so awesome, man. You know, he's so nice. You know, it's just like,
yeah, well, you brought a lot to the table. You're playing great keys, but you can also sing. Yeah. You know what I mean? You have mad knowledge.
But I'm looking at Greg for the changes. You know, I'm watching his hands, you know, because, like, you know, it's just, that's sort of in the spirit of sort of jamming. Like, we didn't really rehearse anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like kind of watching old Greg for the changes. Okay, there's an A minor there. Okay, cool. Here we go. You know.
Yeah. Now, does this open your door to play with the Dead guys, or how does this happen?
Actually, the dead thing happened at that same year at Bonnaroo. Phil Lesh was there, and I guess he saw us play. And that's around the same time we had that one song on the radio. So, and I think his kids may have liked it or something. Somehow he got wind of it. I don't know how he got wind of it, but I literally got a call from him months later. I don't know how he got my phone number, but I suppose he has his ways. He goes, and he says, Jackie, this is Phil Lesh. And I was like, bullshit.
This
is somebody playing a prank on me. And he wanted, but it turned out it was Phil, and he wanted me to come down to, which is now closed, that studio in Sausalito, real famous one.
Record plant?
The plant, yeah. And at the time, he was working on trying to write songs for a television show, which never, you know, never materialized, never happened. So I went down there, and, you know, we were just sort of fiddling around with some songs. And
were you a Deadhead?
I wasn't. I wasn't at the time. I mean, of course, I knew who he was, and I knew who the Grateful Dead were at the time. But I didn't really know that much about the Grateful Dead. I knew like a handful of songs. You know, I didn't really.
Right,
you know,
right. That was like me. I knew Truckin'.
Yeah, exactly.
Touch
I knew
Truckin'.
Yeah, Truckin' and like Casey Jones.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right.
And you know, so I go down there. And the next thing I know, you know, John Molo, the drummer, shows up, and Larry Campbell shows up, and it you know. And then the next thing I know, we're playing Grateful Dead songs. And then, like, 3 days after that, Phil's like, let's tour.
No shit.
I'm like, okay.
Really?
Let's do it.
So you go to write tunes with him for a TV show. Do you think it's really fake and he's just seeing how you play?
No, I think it's legit. I just think he has a lot of different musical things that he wants to do. And I think he just, you know, he felt compelled to put a band together, you know, and go play some shows. Maybe he was inspired.
Now, this is Phil Lesh and Friends?
This is Phil Lesh and Friends. So this is 2006 or so.
Now, does he just throw you hundreds of tunes?
I get stacks of tunes. You know, he's got a big archive. He's got tons of, you know, all this Grateful Dead material. And I go through and I'm listening to him, and he's making set lists, and he's letting me choose some things. He's seen what I like and you know, but at the same time, it's you know, he's very good at like saying, like, I'll tell you this, like the first time I ever sang Sugary, which is now a song that we do all the time, and
wow,
I love
that's
it
dope.
You know, the first time I ever sang it was, I'd never even heard it before.
Yeah,
it was like, it was some show, we were on the road, and I goes, Jackie, I think I'd like you to sing Sugary tonight.
Oh,
like,
no.
And I'm like, okay, Phil, I've never heard the song.
Oh.
You know, he's like, don't worry, you'll be fine.
Don't worry, you'll be fine.
Don't worry, you'll be
now,
just
are
fine.
You using a teleprompter? Or
no,
how
I just
know?
Have. I just went back to the dressing room, and I listened to it a bunch. I was like, okay, you know, I charted it out. I wrote it out. I'm like, okay, I think I got it. And, you know, I just had to go for it.
What about the lyrics, though?
Well, I had I printed out the lyrics, and I had them on my music stand. Just so I couldn't memorize them in the pressure of, like, having to do it that day.
Right.
So, and then we, you know... And he was never really like, he's never really been
a stickler
for like trying to do things just, you know, the way the Dead did it in 76. He's like, dude, right. You know, sing it your way. You
and
know.
That's got to be a lot of pressure though, because these Deadheads, boy, they hit the internet right away and
they're
like, what the fuck's going on?
They do. But at the same time, it was sort of like I was put in this unique position of finding my new favorite band in front of everybody else that's already their favorite band.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, let me go tell them to shut up real quick.
Okay. Yeah, you're good.
Can you hear it?
Yeah, we're good. That's interesting because as I start to fall in love with the Dead, I'm absolutely obsessed now, you know? Like,
yeah, it
my
can
buddy's
be obsessive.
Mark Maron,
yeah.
And he's like, you're a fucking, you're just a Deadhead now. What
Mark,
happened?
You're friends with Mark Maron?
Oh, yeah.
He plays guitar, right?
Yeah, we just got off tour together. I was
Dude, he's awesome.
He's great,
he's
man.
He's fucking hilarious. I've seen his show a few times. It's pretty fucking
Yeah,
funny,
I was on
man.
The show last season.
Did he just had a, he had
the president old, on.
The president on.
Today, he's interviewing Keith Richards in New York today.
Really?
Yeah, one-on-one.
God bless him.
Yeah.
So not from his garage. Keith won't come to his garage,
no,
but the president will.
He's not like that, but it's like he's in New York, and right. It's like, fuck it, I'll go out there, you know?
Cool.
It's like, but if yeah. Keith was here, you know he'd go in there.
Yeah,
Obama
I'd go into the garage. Yeah,
Obama went
I heard they had snipers on the
they did.
On the neighbor's
yeah.
Can you imagine the conversation that you knock on your neighbor's door, Mark's like...
Oh, that's funny. He does a
like,
bit.
Hey, man, is that a...
Yeah,
does he
does
do
a
that?
Bit.
Oh, man, I can imagine... He's like... Hey, I don't know how to ask you this. Is it cool if we put some snipers on your roof?
That's what he you know? Says. It's so fucking funny,
dude,
man.
I'd
it's
love to so be that neighbor. You know?
And if you've been to his neighborhood, you would be like...
He's here in L.A., right?
Yeah, and it's cool. So quiet and there's really? Nothing going on. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden you got snipers on your right. roof and the president.
That's hilarious.
It's wild. But, you know, I'm finding the Dead now. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, Blues for Allah. Mm-hmm. You know, holy shit, this is a record. Oh, Dead Set. I love
right.
this record.
Yeah.
And all these tunes. So that must be cool. Like you said, you're all of a sudden falling in love with a band that you're playing with, man.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
crazy, right?
Yeah, it's a very cool, it's a very, like, I don't know if I could ever duplicate that experience because it's, you know, I mean, that's kind of exactly what it was. It's sort of like I'm discovering my new, you know, my new muse, basically, like at the same time as learning it, you know,
yeah.
And it's sort of, and in front of thousands of people who have already loved that for decades.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's really interesting.
It's weird,
know?
Right? Like, I think, like, man, what was I fucking doing not listening
exactly,
to
yeah.
this?
And I remember, like, I saw Phil Lesh and friends when I was 18 and doing a tour with, they were doing a tour with Bob Dylan. I went to go see Bob Dylan and I saw Phil Lesh and friends and I
just left.
I didn't even realize what I was, you know, because I had no
yeah.
reference, you know. I
right.
had, and it's so weird that, like, 7-8 years later, I'm in that band, you know. I'm like,
that's
weird.
Great.
You
now,
know?
How many dates did you guys do?
We did quite a few. I mean, we did several legs with, or we did one sort of long tour with the Allman Brothers.
Wow.
Where we flip flopped every night, which was a lot of fun.
That's cool. And you got to see like Warren every
yeah,
night.
Yeah, yeah, it was great.
And who else was on that run with the? Was it
in the Phil band? It was Steve Mollets played keys.
Steve Mollets.
Mollets.
Oh, yeah. And I thought you meant Dixie Dregs. Steve.
And John Mollo played drums and Larry Campbell. Who's just a badass, played guitar and like mandolin and like tons of
Was
you know.
Larry Campbell in Dylan's band?
Yeah,
that's right, though.
He was. He was in Dylan. That's the funny thing. The time when I saw
yeah.
Phil and friends.
He was in Dylan?
He was in Dylan's band
yeah.
at the time. And then it's so weird that I was like, hey, who's this tall, handsome dude, scary looking dude playing in Dylan's band? That guy's awesome. And then I'm in a band with him and.
Yeah,
you know, in Phil's band.
And so
later.
You're the
so
singer.
Weird.
You were the singer.
I sang. I think I probably sang most of the stuff, and then Larry sang a couple. Phil would sing a couple. Then everything that had like harmonies and stuff, we'd sing together. You know,
this has to be really where you become like a jam king. You
well,
know?
It definitely was like a crash course in how in, you know in sort of the. How to do that. I mean, Phil is totally fearless. You know, I was first at first really sort of weirded out by the idea that. You know, he's like, well, why don't we just put the two songs together and jam? And how do we get from one song to another? And I was like, Phil, how do we do that? I don't know how to do it. And he's like, well, we'll figure it out. I'm just
no,
like,
no rehearsal.
Okay. Yeah, no.
Just no.
We'll figure it out. And he, you know, he would say, you know, he would, you just really have to listen. If he starts playing, you know, we're in B minor or something, he starts playing, you know, in A major or something, we just follow him, and then he ends up in D major, which is the key of the next song, and we're like, okay, you
yeah.
know, and then
now
kinda,
you know you're there.
You kind of we're kind of there,
right?
You know? And it's just, you know, the idea of that is, you know, at the time it was totally foreign to me. I'm like, that makes, you know, how do you do that, you know? And now it's. You know, we don't in my band, we don't do that a whole lot. We segue things, but not to that degree. But it's definitely sort of opened up, like, my mind to the possibilities of being able to put together a set of music that works that way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, Phil's just totally fearless. Like, he's just not afraid to to fall flat, you know, like, and it's okay, you know.
Yeah.
He just told me that. He's like, it's okay to take chances. And
if it falls apart, you just roll on.
You just roll with it. And sometimes it's awesome. And sometimes, you know, like, in order to get those moments, you have to be able to fall flat on your ass like half the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so. It's like with being a comedian, when you're doing crowd work.
Right. Or if you're doing new shit.
Yeah,
right?
New shit. Yeah. And you're just... You're riffing and doing new shit. Your mind is on, yeah. And you know at any time, if it completely tanks, you go to trucking.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
Which would be my A joke. And right, then yeah. Boom, you've got him right back in, yeah. You know?
Your go-to.
Yeah, yeah, Dark Star. You right, know? Yeah.
This ain't working. Go to Dark Star.
Now, when that ends, are you kind of bummed? Because he's doing big gigs. You got to be making some good money.
It's good, yeah.
Filling the bank account back up. You're on a bus, right? Yep. You guys busing around. You're meeting cool people.
Yep.
And there's, I mean, you're touring with the Allman Brothers at that point.
That's awesome.
Some great shit. And it ends. Were you bummed, or you're just like, that's another chapter in Jackie Green?
Well, no, the thing is, it's never really ending. I mean, there's still, Phil Lesh and Friends has always been sort of a rotating cast of characters. I would say those couple years was a solid band, and it was a touring band. And now, you know, and you get, you know, the guy, you know, the man is 74 years old now. So, like, he's going to, he probably, and he opened his club, sorry, in between those times.
Oh, yeah, in Fairfax?
In Mill Valley? San Rafael.
Oh, and he's got a club in San Rafael?
Yeah, it's in San Rafael, okay. Terrapin Crossroads. And so he's, you know, he's putting a lot of effort into that. And it's been really sort of wonderful to be able to just sort of go down there and play music together in that capacity, in a club capacity, where it's... You know, there's not a lot of like stress. There's not a lot of, you know, the things that you're just worried about the hotel.
You just go
or whatever.
Get off and go home.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's where, you know, that's where his heart is playing live and to sort of curate his own Phil Lesh and Friends experiences in basically his own living room. I think that's probably a dream come true for him. And I just saw him on
the last shows.
In Chicago?
Yeah, I went to the Santa Clara.
Cool. I went to Chicago, the last one.
Oh, you did?
I did. It was awesome.
What? Did he hook you up and you just say...
I went down to the pit there. Yeah, it was awesome.
Wow.
It was awesome.
Now, what'd you think of Trey? I thought he was fucking dynamite.
I thought it was great. I thought the whole thing was wonderful. It was like... I mean, the most amazing thing to me was that there was like, it was such a huge show.
Yeah.
Like there were, you know, 70,000 people
huge.
Or whatever. And then there was like 20,000 people without tickets, you know, just like milling around. And I'm just like, there's close to 100,000 people, you know, deadheads here. And they really did a good job of like, as far as I know, nobody got hurt. Nobody got harassed.
Yeah. It was so mellow, right?
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Even like, cop-wise.
It could have been. Yeah. That's what I mean. It could have been horrible, you know, but it wasn't. It was like it, you know, because I walked through the front door like everybody else, and it was kind of awesome.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it was
like, wow.
Because we're thinking about like back when the Dead was really huge and going, say, you know, 70s all the way up to the 80s and even early 90s. Drug use is just going on, and people are fucking bad tripping and everything.
Right.
But now, it's although the world is a little freer, they're also way tighter. And
right,
in Chicago,
sure.
So you've got these hippies walking around, and they're high, and
and
you know, and there's scams going on or whatever. So yeah, it could have been a potential disaster.
It could have been catastrophic, but like it wasn't. It's like however they put that together with the, you know, the security and the infrastructure that brought it all together was pretty marvelous. You know?
That dude, you live in Brooklyn now. That dude that put those on,
Peter. Yeah,
yeah, he's got the bowling alley and everything.
Brooklyn Bowl. He's
what a genius that guy is.
He did a great job putting it all together. I've known him for several years now, and he's a sweetheart. And I know he was really nervous about it.
Oh, you gotta be.
He was like shitting bricks about it. But I think all in all, it worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
So he's got to be pretty proud of that.
John Mayer, what do you think of that?
I just did an interview yesterday where somebody just now told I didn't really hear about that.
Right.
I think it's fine. Like, I mean, they're all musicians. They want to play together.
I get
What's the big deal?
You know, I get
like,
it. Yeah.
I think it's great. You know, and like I think it's pretty buff that they can just be like, ah, let's just do Madison Square Garden. No big deal.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that's awesome.
It seems. Know? I mean, like.
And O'Teal's a badass bass player.
Oh no, he's incredible.
Bad. He's gonna.
Oh
he's,
yeah.
He's.
I just don't. And I try to get on this thing now over the last couple years. Promote what's great, not what you hate.
Mm-hmm.
But on this particular thing, I do not see it.
You don't see it.
I do not see it, man.
Maybe I don't know. I don't really know either way. I just think, you know, I think it's. I don't begrudge anybody for you know.
I don't either.
That they want to do.
I don't either.
I
don't either.
And I think it's. I think I actually kind of think it'll probably be pretty awesome.
You do?
I do. Yeah. It, for not the same reasons that maybe like a proper Grateful Dead thing would be awesome.
Right,
for different reasons, you know. I think it'd be cool, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's totally valid. And I think it's totally valid to have, you know, Bobby and Mickey and Billy involved in something like that. You know what I mean? I think it's totally cool.
I like I said, I'm not bagging on it, but it just seems to me like they had Kimmock, you know. They had the dude from Dark Star Orchestra play.
Mm-hmm.
They had Trey. And when I saw Trey, I felt like, fuck, this feels so good.
Yeah,
it felt so good to me, man.
Yeah,
you're talking about a guy who is around because of the Dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he's in the Dead, and you're just kind of like, wow, like you love him. Like, what a champion.
Yeah, you're rooting for him.
I really wanted that to keep going. You know, not as the Grateful Dead, but okay, let's do some indoors with him or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but I understand Trey's like, you know, he's got his thing. And
but, who knows the inner workings of it? But they're musicians. They want to play, and you know, fuck it, they should play.
Now, when you're playing with Phil Lesh, is this where you meet Chris Robinson? How does this
happen? Yeah, I met Chris through Phil. We met. I can't remember exactly where we met, but I remember one of the. No, I think we actually might have met. We opened for the Black Crowes, I think, my band. Before that, I can't totally remember, but definitely like the friendship. Was struck up through the Grateful Dead and through Phil, knowing Phil, and you know playing and Phil and Friends on various occasions together, and then from there, when the Crows needed a guitar player for that tour, they just called me and said, hey, can you do this?
Yeah,
this gig, it's going to be a year long, and I was sort of freaking out about it. I was like, oh man, it's a long time, you know what I mean, and. But it turned out to be great, you know. It turned out to be a lot of fun for me,
right.
And like you know, it was kind of cool to just. Play guitar, not have to worry about singing and, you know, and sort of, and, you know, being sort of a famously loud rock and roll band for years, a lot of fun. We, you know,
you're stepping into a band like the Dead who had such an iconic, I mean, really people are straight up Mark Ford.
Totally.
You know, Luther did.
Dude, you know, what's funny is that like we would do these, meet and greets.
Oh, they call you Mark Ford.
I was like, did you guys not have the fucking internet for the last 20 years?
Isn't that the worst? Right then is when I know the interview's over.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because they're like, so Mark, tell us about your SG on this tour. Yeah, like, what?
I'm like, oh boy. I'm like, I love Mark Ford, but he's like 25 years older than me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah. It's a wild thing. I'm a humongous Black Crowes fan, of course. And then they had Oddly, which was a kind of a weird era. And then they get Luther. A lot of people loved Luther.
I'm friends with all those guys. I'm friends with Luther. I'm friends with Oddly. I don't know Mark, but I'm friends. You know, I imagine I'd probably be friends with him if I knew him.
Yeah. So you know, how do you approach that? Do you just say, like, I always look right away at the band when they're playing Wiser Time.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be the main tune where you could see the guy's own style.
Right.
All the other stuff is pretty blues oriented. It's bow, dun, 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 you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But when you get into that intro and it's like, you know, it's that long thing. You see the guys, what they're going to bring to
it. Yeah, that's definitely the song where everybody got to stretch out. You know, everybody got an extended solo. And it's sort of, for me, unless there was something super specific that Chris or Rich wanted me to do, they pretty much let me, they're like, you know, they would say, this is where you take a solo. doesn't have to be like Mark did. It doesn't have to be like anybody did. I'm like, okay, great. Because I can't really, I'm not going to try and cop lick for lick. You know, that's not my thing anyways. And I wouldn't be able to do it anyways. I have to sort of do it my own way. And so, you know, that was like, that made the job a lot easier. You know, but that, you know, with that said, there's definitely like some riffs and stuff that I had to learn. You
some
know,
key stuff.
Some specific things. But for the most part, it was, you know, Chris would point, you know, and be like, go. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I remember like when you're, this is like really your first time playing like full blown loud rock.
That's definitely the loudest band ever.
Right. Yeah, so now how do you figure that out? Like head wise and equipment, like, shit, should I go Les Paul? Should I go SG?
Well, what I didn't,
Marshalls.
What I brought was I had in my possession a couple 412 cabinets, which I've never used before because I've never been in a situation that required it. And when time came to load the gear, I just brought everything.
Yeah.
And as we were playing gigs, the first run of shows were in England, and we didn't really have our own, we had our own amps, but we didn't have our own, I don't think we had our own, like back stage line. Carpets and, and like, and front of house stuff. So everything was really sort of like, it didn't sound that good on stage. I was just like, oh shit, this is going to be real hard because it was real loud. But when we got back to the States, it mellowed out a little bit. It was still loud, but it was like a lot more, I could hear a lot better. And then I sort of got to dial in what guitars I thought would be good for each song. And mainly it had to do with what Rich wasn't playing. So like if Rich was going to be playing single coils, I'd try to play humbuckers. And, you know, just because that's sort of my aesthetic as a guitar player, I like the two guitars to be different. You know, like if they're two close to the same tone, I think it's a little muddy. It's a little, it's same. Just
too much mids if it's humbuckers.
Yeah,
it's
exactly. So if I had a Strat out there, if he was playing, you know, most of the time, if he was playing like something with humbuckers or something, I'd play a Strat, and I had something with P90s in it. You know, we just sort of, I just look at Rich and look at what he's got on his, you know, what he's used to doing, and I would just work around that.
Yeah.
You know,
you really have to learn how to play loud because it's such a weird thing. It's different. Your guitar is fucking loud.
It's so loud. And
you got to learn how to play with dynamics. And when you hit it, it's like,
dude, I tell you this, it was so, we did a thing in the UK where we played in front of Bruce Springsteen, and there was like, you know, like 60,000 Bruce Springsteen fans out there, and you know that was one of the gigs where I used both my 100-watt amps, you know. And it was just like and just to be on a stage like that and just like hit just ginormous chords, you know, at, you know, on like Hotel Illness or something like that. It's just like, it feels so good, you know, because when you're on, it's one thing when you're inside, then it's real loud, but if you're outside, it kind of, you know, you can kind of get away with it. It's not too painful.
Yeah, it just goes out.
Yeah, it goes out.
Also on the tour you did was really Black Crowes from Amorica all the way up to when you played were really turned into kind of a jam band. Some of the songs were real long. Yeah. But when you played, they were tightened back down, except for a few like My Morning Song or Wiser Time and stuff.
Yeah.
But you could tell that, I mean, you know, basically Robinson is full blown, you know, dead now. He's moving to the Bay Area.
He's always, is he? I didn't know that.
That's the word I heard. Yeah, I heard he's looking for a house.
He loves the Grateful Dead. He would listen to, he's a huge Grateful Dead fan. He would just listen to the Grateful Dead after every show, which is cool because, I mean, that's something that we all agree on. You know what I mean?
Totally,
totally fine. But he loves the Dead.
Yeah.
And I remember he actually gave me, it's very cool of him, he had like this fake leather vest. He actually gave me some cool clothes. He had this fake leather vest from when they opened for the Dead, like in the early 90s. And he had inside were still his backstage stickies from the Grateful Dead show. And I super glued him in there. So I still got
it. Wow, really?
I wear it every once in a while. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
There's probably some fucking toot in there, too. Yeah, right, some like, fucking, I'm like, what's in that? You don't want to wear that thing customs.
Yeah, what's in the, don't take this thing to the airport. Like, what's in this pocket here, dude? Oh, my God, you know?
Yeah.
He gave me his. He had these suede bell bottoms that were tie-dyed suede bell bottoms that he gave to me, and I still don't have the balls to wear them.
Yeah,
I mean, that dude was so skinny. I mean, he's a foot taller than me, but I probably weigh more than he does.
Yeah.
So it's just, He was really cool to me, you know. He's very cool.
Could you tell it was over when you were on that tour?
No, I don't think that anybody. I don't think that, you know, when that announcement came out. I mean, I knew about it, but I don't that you know the things between you know between Rich, Chris, and Steve is, you know, quite. It's not really any of my business.
Of course
and,
not.
And I, you know, the tour itself, I thought was great. You know, I have to say that from everything that I've heard about, you know. The horror stories that I've heard, none of that stuff happened when we were out there. It seemed like everybody was having a good time, and the music was good, and everybody was getting along. It felt like
shows were packed,
and the shows were packed, and we were having fun, and it was like, you know, so if that's the way that it's going to go out, then it you know that I'm proud to be a part of that, you know.
Yeah.
So, but in terms of like, did anybody know it was over? I don't know. You know, I'm sort of like I was a hired guy. You know, I'm not really that hip to the sort of the inner workings. You know, I'm friends with everybody, but they, you know, those guys have known each other since they were kids.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, 15, 16.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just, you know, I'm half their age. You know,
I get it. Yeah,
I don't really know, but I just like to think that we had a really good time out there, and it was, you know, it was a hell of a lot of fun for me. So
yeah, yeah. I mean, you know. I mean, look at the groups you've got to play with. You know, you got to play with Phil, your own band, Mother Hips, Black Crows.
Yeah, all,
you know,
awesome.
All awesome. And also, so the audiences are your dream audience as a musician.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, bands like Wilco, Mother Hips, you know, Black Crows,
yep.
They can play forever.
For
Zero
sure.
radio
yeah.
play.
Yeah.
And that. Can it bleeds into people coming and seeing you.
Yeah.
And I think that's the genius of the Americana, alt country, jam, whatever you want
whatever
to fucking
you call
it.
Yeah.
I call it music, the last of the music fans,
yeah.
The real music fans.
Yeah.
You want that because you can just play for the rest of your life and they're like, oh,
sure.
It was cool. We went and saw them and they did a band record this tour.
Yeah, right.
Or whatever,
yeah,
your
they
idea
played,
is.
They played some weird Pink Floyd jam. That was
yeah.
cool, you know, or whatever. Yeah,
yeah.
And that's, you know, I think that's the case with bands who are real bands. You know, they just sort of want to get off and they're in however, you know, they see fit. And that might be one day, you know, in the Crows, that might be, you know, Chris bringing, I think he wanted to do Medicated Goo,
yeah.
You know, that traffic bit. And we started doing that, you know, and it was a lot of fun, you know?
Yeah. 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 I saw him and they did like the Exile record.
Really?
Yeah.
Just fun. You
yeah.
know, just,
it is fun, man. And the crowd
all,
gets off.
That's all
on
it's
it.
Really about in,
yeah.
at the end of the day. Right. So, you know,
so talk a little bit about your gear. I'm a gearhead. I love gear. You have a Pelham Blue SG. I used to
I
have
do.
A 65. What year is that one?
That one, the one I have is a 61.
61? Is it really Pelham Blue? Or
no,
was it,
they never... It's been refinished.
Yeah, right.
So
64 or something is when they start doing Pelham Blue.
I know they got refinished sometime in the 70s, which is the only reason I could afford it, because it made
yeah.
about half the price. But everything else is original on it. Actually, that's not true. I changed the tuners on it because the other ones were shot.
Yeah, yeah.
I got that. And I got a, that's sort of my main guitar.
And I saw you got a flame top Les Paul.
I do.
59.
That's a newer one. Yeah. I can't, obviously I can't, that would be
yeah,
200 grand.
Yeah, 200 grand. One. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then what do you got? 335?
I have two 335s, which I didn't bring out on this run. And I have a good, two good Strats, a good Tele. I have a really great Les Paul Jr., a 55 Les Paul Jr. I played that with the Crows a lot, with this, the one P90 in
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's a
the,
very
the
rock and roll guitar.
Like Tobacco Sunburst.
Yeah, Tobacco Sunburst. Just a nasty guitar.
Yeah.
Just
I call those
guitar.
The rock and roll machine.
It's a rock and
they
roll
really
machine.
They really are. They're like the blue-collar rock machine.
It's all it does.
So
it
you,
does.
You roll the you roll yeah. the volume down to 8, and
yeah.
you've got this thing, and then when you go to solo,
exactly.
you roll it to 10, and
totally.
It's like, ah!
Exactly. That's the rock and roll guitar. Like, that's what it does.
Yeah, I
it's
love just... the TV special, the two
yeah,
P90s.
Dude. Those are awesome.
Same kind of thing, you know.
Exactly. Same
They've
idea.
Got those big necks.
Yeah.
And they just fucking rock.
They rock and they don't stay in tune too well. They're amazing.
Yeah, yeah, I know. They got the shitty wraparound bridge,
yeah,
so the
exactly.
intonation's funky,
yeah, exactly.
you know, and all that.
Totally.
When you're out on tour, do you go gear hunting?
I used to, but these days it's kind of like, you know, with the internet, it's kind of like it's just sort of easier to search on the internet. But because the idea of finding sort of that garage sale gem is, that's never happened to me. You've heard the story.
That's all.
I found a 1959 335 for $400. You know, it's like, oh, great, asshole.
The internet ruined that.
It ruined that. So,
hey, Jimmy, let's see what we have here. They go, oh my God, it's worth $40,000.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you were living, last time I talked to you, I think you were living in Modesto or something, like on a farm.
I still have the house. It's I live in near Lodi.
Yeah.
Which is more near Sacramento. And I still have the place. I got a little studio on it. Got a little couple acres. It's probably dry as a bone right now. I haven't been back there in a while. But now I live in Brooklyn. I have a place in Brooklyn.
Are you renting out the...
And
what made you go to Brooklyn?
Well, I got a girl now in Brooklyn.
Oh, that's where... Did you meet her on tour?
No, I've actually known her for a really long time. I've known her for like 10 years, and we've been always been like really good friends, and just sort of now we're both the same age, so we're both at the age where it's, you know, time to settle down, and so it's worked out really good for me.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's like she's...
Is she from New York?
She's from Cleveland.
Oh wow!
And she's from Cleveland,
but she was living in Brooklyn.
She was living in Harlem when I met her.
Wow!
She's a social worker, and she's, you know, just like salt of the earth, like help. She works with, you know, homeless, like the homeless. She works in a homeless outreach program, and, you know, basically gets paid shit to go march up to Harlem every day and help people.
I love Brooklyn.
I love Brooklyn too, and
I love New York. I just don't like winter.
Oh man, it was horrible this winter.
Yeah,
it was, and there was no spring. It was freezing.
That January
and
this year was brutal.
It was brutal, and then all of a sudden it was 95 degrees. You know, it was like there was a very small window of spring. It was kind of a drag.
I love the New York women. I like I just like them better than these Southern California women.
Yeah,
like some people like that Southern California blonde with the boobs.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I like the New York kind of Sofia Coppola looking girls rolling around.
They're
you know,
kind of bust your balls,
and they got really awesome outfits on.
Sure, yeah.
And they're not in the entertainment business.
Right, yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, the quote unquote entertainment business.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. All right, so now you're out on the road here. What happened to Trigger Hippie?
Well, I just have this record that I've got coming out, and it's just, you know, it's just we Trigger Hippie.
What was that song? It was fucking great.
Which one?
The one where you and Joan Osborne sang together. It was a song.
Get up in the morning.
Oh yeah, that fucking song, dude.
Yeah,
back in the day, that is a K-Fog smash.
A K-Fog smash.
Yeah, I mean, they would play that thing, and then they would play Train, and
that's
then
hilarious.
They would play like fucking Wilco. You know what I mean? All three in a row. But
yeah, man.
It was those songs when you first hit them, like that Jayhawks Blue song. You know, when you first hear it, you go, "That's a radio AOL." Is it AOL? You know, like that. K-Fog format across America would just grab it and play
like
the shit.
Oh, like a
AAA. That's it. AAA.
For sure. I don't, you know, we had a, Trigger Hippie's going to still continue without me. I have this record coming out, and I mean, to be honest, it's just where my heart needs to be, in just this one spot, and I just don't, like, I've done the thing where I've been in a lot of bands, as you know, I want to like put my best effort forward for this thing. So, and they, you know, and I just sort of, at the end of the day, they wanted to do some different stuff that I don't want to do. And I thought it'd be better to sort of remain friends with everybody rather than sort of be a drag for everybody. So
now you wrote that song, right?
Do you ever
think like, fuck, I should have kept it for my record?
No, absolutely not, because it was totally meant to be a duet to begin with a woman.
Yeah.
And when Joan and I sang it together, it was like, oh shit, well there it is. And it'll always be that way. It's always going to be a Trigger Hippie song.
Yeah, yeah, it's so cool. It's almost like a Carole King, what's his name? James Taylor.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, the voice is
a little grittier.
No, totally. Yeah. I'm a huge Carole King fan.
Me too.
Fucking love Tapestry. Yeah. I think it's one of the best
records. That's one of the best records ever made.
Ever made. I go crazy on You Got a Friend.
Yeah.
I go crazy on,
Feel the Earth Move Under My Feet.
That's a great one. That's the first. It's weird because they open with a big, I feel the earth, and then they go right into All Ballads.
Well, then you have Natural Woman.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Jesus.
Yeah. What's that one about moving? I forget.
Oh God.
Yeah. What is it? I love that song.
We're gonna sound like a bunch of dorks here.
Yeah, totally.
Where's the iPhone?
So Trigger Hippie, you're no longer doing that, and now you have a new record coming out. What's it called?
It's called Back to Birth. It's coming out in a couple weeks. Actually, it's coming out this month, August 21st. It's not psychedelic. It's like more in that Americana.
Back to your early record?
Americana vein. Yeah, very much so. And there's a lot more piano on it than normal. I wrote a lot of songs on piano for that one. So, it's been cool because we've been getting some pretty good reception on a lot of the new songs. So, you know, hopefully it works out.
Where'd you record it at?
I recorded up in Portland. Steve Berlin from Los Lobos produced it, who's done a couple of my records. And it was good because we did it up there when we didn't have a whole lot of time to do it. And so Steve and I already know each other really well. So we sort of just went in and started working. Like, we didn't have to have any meetings or anything.
Yeah.
Any bullshit. We just sort of went in and started working. And
tape? You recorded on tape?
Recorded to tape, yeah. Recorded to tape and then did the overdubs back at my place in Lodi. And
no longer the studio in San Fran, right?
No. Tim moved his stuff to his house, and I moved my stuff. When I moved out of the city, it was, dude, I mean, we looked into maybe buying a building.
Impossible.
Forget it.
It's impossible, right?
It's impossible. So we're like, this is
ridiculous. San Francisco is done.
You can't afford anything in that fucking town.
I was just in Portland.
And I love San Francisco.
Me too.
I say that with love.
Fuck
yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Get your shit together, man.
You're talking to me. Yeah, man. I mean, I went through the first wave. You could live in an apartment for $2.75.
Right.
You could eat a burrito for $3 and drink beers for $1.50 in the Hate. And you would be a god. And you could fucking hustle that from a couple gigs and selling some used clothes at Wasteland.
Right.
And that's how you survive.
Right.
And then the first wave comes through of dot-coms in 96.
Yeah.
Everything's gone. The clubs, everything's. Paradise Lounge, DNA Lounge, all that shit. The I-Beam, the Night Break, all that stuff is fucking gone. And now, so then it starts to come back again about maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago, like when you and Tim have a studio and I'm up there hanging out and I'm going, hey, this feels good again.
Yeah.
And now it fucking techies take over.
Yeah, it's way too expensive. I mean, by the time I moved out, when I was looking around, I think the median condo price was like $650,000. And I was just like, Jesus.
Yeah, and there's guys shooting dope in your hallway there.
Yeah, I'm like, this is not even a place you want to live.
I know.
Like, anybody?
$600,000 if you've been on the tour.
Yeah.
Well, I'm on tour all the time and I'll look at
the houses.
I'll look, and it's hilarious. It'll be,
you can get two of them.
Yeah, like, right. 129, full blown mansion.
You're right. Yeah, exactly. You're like you're in like Tennessee or something. I mean, something like that in Nashville would get you the whole block.
Yeah.
You know, in East
Brooklyn's
Nashville,
pretty crazy too.
Brooklyn's crazy too. But I mean, it's also the sort of the kind of place where you, at least for me, you don't plan to be forever. You're going to rent a place. And unless you just have a shit ton of dough, if that's the case, then who cares? But I don't. So we're renting a place. And then, if we start having a family or something, we'll move out or something.
Yeah.
Live somewhere else.
Did Brooklyn influence your writing on this record?
Well, no, because I'm a new Brooklyn. I mean, I've only lived in Brooklyn since January.
Wow.
So this record was already done since then. But, I imagine that it's going to influence the next wave of songs. I've started making some songs out there. I gave myself a little apartment studio setup, which consists of a tape recorder.
Yeah.
And a microphone. Yeah.
You know. Wow, man. Well, when's the record come out?
It's coming August 21st.
August 21st. What's it called?
It's called Back to Birth.
Back to Birth?
Yeah.
And what label's it on?
It's on a label from North Carolina called Yep Rock. Chuck's on that label.
Chuck Prophet?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think he is, or at least he was.
Yeah, and vinyl?
Yeah, we're doing vinyl. We're doing, I think they're doing, it's going to be double vinyl because it's kind of long.
You got to do vinyl now, right?
You got to do vinyl.
It's the only way people buy music.
I know, and I've been trying to get, the labels on to own my other records to do that, and they don't want to hear it from me. So this one will come out on vinyl, and hopefully we'll sell a shit ton of them.
And is tonight is the first night of your, what's going on? You just starting the tour?
We're about halfway through the first leg of the tour. Tonight, yeah, we're in LA tonight. We played the Grammy Museum last night, which is actually a lot of fun. Like we did an interview, in front of a crowd, and then we played a handful of songs. It was sort of real fancy and proper.
It was actually great.
Kind of a lot of fun. It was great.
I'm doing a show for the Grammys now.
Cool.
History of rock and comedy Grammys.
Awesome.
6 episodes. We just shot our first episode. Do you look back at a record that really was the one,
for me?
Yeah, that got you into music.
Oh, absolutely. Probably a handful of them. One of them is going to be Small Change, Tom Waits.
Oh,
Tom Waits
record called Small Change. I just saw that on vinyl. I was going to buy it, and it was $45.
Is it really?
Well, they're hard to get, Tom Waits.
Really?
On vinyl.
They're reissued.
Well,
though.
Not the reissues.
Oh, like an original
I try
one?
To get originals, because you don't know who's reissuing them. You get them home, and they did
that's
it off
true.
A fucking CD.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true. It'd be cool if Mobile Fidelity did
no, I buy all those.
Those are great. Mobile
oh my
Fidelity
god!
If they did Tom Waits reissues,
I got Desire.
And they did a bunch of Little Feet stuff. That's fucking sounds.
The
great.
Dylans are unbelievable.
Yeah. Tom definitely
Small
Tom
Change.
Waits, Small Change. Ray Charles records. A lot of blues stuff. A lot of some Stone stuff. Probably a lot of the same shit that you were into.
Yeah, yeah. Are you the Brian Jones era or Mick Taylor or all eras?
All eras, dude. It's the Stones.
Yeah. That fucking Sticky Fingers record hurts me so hard.
It's, dude, Sticky Fingers, Some Girls.
Some Girls. Even Black and Blue.
Black and
Even. Last night we were listening to it, man. Fingerprint File.
Dude, I mean, it's the fucking Stones, man.
Yeah.
Like, what do you want?
I mean? I saw you play last year, and I think out of all your stuff, the Les Paul was the best tone.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people say. That's a really good sounding guitar.
It really sounded great.
It's a good sounding guitar. Like, that particular one is for some reason or another, it's just sort of a special guitar, and I don't know if I'll ever get rid of that damn guitar. That thing's, it's heavy, and it's actually not that heavy for Les Paul, but it's heavier than the
SG
or something that. But it sounds bitchin'. It's just a bad guitar,
You got Nate on guitar.
Yep, and his Strat sounds bad.
I've known him for 20 years or something. I don't know. Did you ever see Sweetvine, or were you too young?
No, I did. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that record, it's so funny. It's one of my all-time favorite records.
Yeah.
And no one knows it. They got dropped. It was on CBS or whatever.
Yeah.
But I couldn't believe how great that record was.
I know. It's so great.
And Hans, the singer, and then the drummer wrote the stuff.
Yeah.
I was just kind of like, how great is this band?
It's
great,
And
I always turn people on to it. Like, check this band out.
Can you even get it? You probably get it online. Right?
I don't think so. I don't know.
It's that hard to get.
I think so. I mean, it was only out for like a couple months, and then they were gone or something, you know? But I think you can hear it on YouTube.
Yeah, somebody's got to put it up on YouTube.
You playing any covers tonight?
Yeah, probably. We'll probably do a Grateful Dead or two.
Oh, what ones?
I'm not going to tell
Sugar.
You.
Okay. All right. I'm going to let you go, man. Thank you so much.
Brother.
You got a website?
JackieGreen.com.
And then Twitter?
I do. Jackie Green.
And this will be out in 2 weeks. In 2 Mondays. How much more of the tour?
Well, this leg, we only got 3 shows left on this leg. Then we take a break, and then we're out for all of September. So,
oh, badass.
Come see us in September.
All right, there you go. Thank you so much, dude.
Thanks,
great
brother.
To have you on, man. Rock and roll. I'll see you tonight. There he is, guys. Jackie Green. Thank you.